A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass?
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promoting for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello and welcome to the AEW Collision Review. I'm Adam Wilborn from What Culture, joined by a lot of jolly boys, Michael Sidgwick from What Culture, to review everything that happened on this weekend's episode of AEW Collision. But before we get into it, if you're a fan of this sort of thing, make sure you subscribe to What Culture Wrestling on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon Music, and YouTube, where we do daily wrestling podcasts where we not only review AEW Collision, but also AEW Dynamite, Raw, SmackDown, the show formerly known as NXT 2.0. Oh! Pay-per-views, premium live events. We have interviews, roundtable discussions, and a roundup of the week complete with a bloody good quiz, of course, on wrestle culture. As I said, though, joined by Sidgwick to look back on AEW Collision, a show that before it even started, I absolutely hated. I've got to be honest, because I messaged you about this on Friday night. We were sat here.
You very rarely get wound up as well.
Oh, yeah. Normally, it's par for the course. You know, they've got Rampage on a Friday night, and normally the Collision card kind of comes together either during Rampage or after Rampage and what have you. And I understand that's the game we play. But we were sat here on Friday going, so we've got Kyle O'Reilly getting back in the ring. That's good. We've got, you know, wider issues regarding AEW we can always talk about. But generally, on Saturday night, what are we going to talk about? What do you think's next for the House of Black?
So what do you guys want to talk about? Something?
And then
something would be good?
I'm in the chip shop on Friday night. I pull the lever of what's going on X. Is the world still on fire? And you're there, and Murray's there, and, well, half of the wrestling world is there going, oh, we get Bryan Danielson versus Shibata on Saturday night. And I was like, could have really done with that about 5 hours ago, Tony. But nevertheless,
I was too hyped on the prospect who gave a toss.
Yes. Nevertheless, what an announcement. What a match. And what a really good show.
Yeah, I had a great time with Collision. Some of it was better than others. But what a lovely, I just had a lovely time. And
we are going to talk Rampage briefly.
Very, very briefly. My goodness. No, Shibata versus Danielson was everything I realistically wanted it to be and, like, much more. Do the recap and I'll talk for the next 8 minutes.
Yes, so to literally open AEW Collision was a Bryan Danielson dream match.
You're joking. Not another one?
Now, I normally use that as a complaint, but I'm fine if you want to. Yeah, this final run of Danielson full-time. You. Osprey, Shibata, you know, just bonkers. We'll probably make a game out of it next week. You can just pick a legend that may or may not work for AEW and suggest that, hey, maybe Tony Nant does that on Friday evening. Nigel McGuinness was on commentary having a jolly old time talking about previous head injuries for both men and how he beat Danielson with a headbutt.
Should we talk about his terrible line first?
Yeah, we briefly touched on this on the Q&A, which if you're watching live, you'll have heard already, but that's going to probably go out in a few days, but we should mention it here, you're right.
Yeah, halfway through, you know, he's usually so good at this heel commentator role, which isn't too overbearing. He will, as we said on the Q&A, balance it with actual analysis of the technique, what wrestlers are going for, what they're trying to avoid, why it's effective, why they should be sort of anxious about the perilous position they find themselves in. And he's got some great one-liners. I think Nigel McGuinness has been, along with Renee Paquette, one of the unsung, well, they get sung quite often, quite frankly, success stories where they just add that bit of colour, that personality, that just sense of, oh, you know, these rules can be good despite being complete factory settings in WWE for as long as they have. And then he said, is he missing a chromosome or something along those lines? And that just was like, oh, that's really insensitive.
Really threw Tony Schiavone, if
really
like
threw
as well.
Schiavone. Hopefully, someone will get in his ear and say, that's absolutely not on.
No.
Because it was a pretty vile thing to say. How could anything remove me from this match?
Yeah.
And yet he managed it for a few moments. I will say that completely different things, so I'm really reluctant about conflating it without this caveat. Tony Khan has got this thing where he's a bit feckless. He's a bit spineless. It's something that has affected AEW from day one, where top stars will get to do something they want to do when it's not really a great idea, but he gives them the latitude. And even in smaller moments, like Jim Ross and his rampant sexism never got called out.
No.
When they were talking about how Penelope Ford and the Bunny were playing these, you know, Jezebel characters, which itself was pretty lame. And then Tony Schiavone was at least on a Rampage episode. It's always stuck with me. Try to say something to the effect of, these conniving wrestlers and they're cheating. They're bad. They're heels. And Jim Ross went, I don't know. I kind of like them. It's like, I know what you're getting at, Jim. So between a sexism and his complete disinterest and outright fury at some of the action he's called. Like, I'm not saying to go to the other end of the extreme because it's pancakes. It's the pancakes and waffles world that I've mentioned. Of, oh, so you think that should happen? No, it's a whole new sentence. So I'm not advocating for complete screaming down the headset, Uber-produced commentary. If you've listened to me a million times, why would I ever advocate for that? But it's a pancakes and waffles world. He's never called Jim Ross out and just said, you know what, shut up about this. Or if you don't like this, pretend. It's your job sort
paying
of thing.
You, yeah.
So hopefully someone has took him aside.
Yeah.
If it's not Tony, to say, that's not on, don't say it.
Must have known it was a bit, you know, there's, anyway. Yeah, you're right. Let's talk about the match. Because like you say, I mean, I'd love to see Michael Sidgwick from what, 2017, yeah.
Because that's when the subdural hematoma happened, and at which point in parallel, Daniel Bryan was what, just the on-screen GM, never looking like he'd ever get cleared.
I remember there was a brief thing I was very, even more so, unknowledgeable about New Japan, and he came in and did one spot, and you were like, oh, but even that was the longest of long. Is that right? Am I thinking?
Yes, so right? He suffers a subdural hematoma at Sakura Genesis in 2017. Apparently loses feeling in one side of his body. He almost dies on the operating table. It looks like he's just completely and utterly done as a wrestler. Comes out the G1, you hear his music, and you just instantly go, Comes out and says, I'm alive, that is all. And it's like, is he going to come back? And then it's reported, no, never, never. Don't know why they did that. Never, 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 never. Then I think it's in the 2019 G1. There's something with Kenta. Where there's a confrontation there. And he himself beats up Kenta. Forearms in the corner. Does this picture-perfect dropkick where it always looks like he's blowing someone's face off with his feet. But he himself doesn't bump. And when they do the heat angle, it's nothing on his head or like no strike to his head. And then Kenta chokes him from behind and sits in his trademark pose over Shibata's prone body. And you think, are they doing this at Wrestle Kingdom? Are you joking? And then I think what they do is they sub in Goto because Goto and Shibata were college roommates. Oh my gosh, they were roommates. And then it doesn't happen. Then you think, well, one of the most electrifying angles I've ever seen, the Shibata-Kenta deal. Like, me and Murray were losing our minds. Like, Murray was like, you need to see what's happening in New Japan. I was like, not Shibata. Or like, who's coming or whatever. And I watched this. Oh my God, this is amazing. Then it got rubbished. And I just thought it was never going to happen. And then it happened. Shibata. Context, all important for why this was so exhilarating for me. It happened in the weirdest way imaginable, where it's Shibata having done a little spot at somewhere. Was it Forbidden Door 2022?
Maybe.
When he has the glasses with Cassidy.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's really cool. And then on Dynamite, it says, oh, it's going to be Katsuyori Shibata versus Orange Cassidy on Rampage with 48 hours notice. I'm like, what? And I'm like, well, this is, I can't believe this. This is amazing. And the special guest commentator was...
It's time to play the game!
Who was the special guest commentator for Katsuyori Shibata versus Orange Cassidy on Rampage, which itself was the surreal out of nowhere development?
Brian Danielson?
Nope.
Okay. Kingston?
Nope. Not a wrestler, a celebrity.
Oh. All I think of is like celebrities in AEW, and I've gone immediately to the Gooch, obviously.
Well, you're not far away.
Mike Tyson was going to be my next guest.
Mike Tyson.
Was it? Wow.
And I watched that match, and it was so much more nice than good.
Yes.
You'll never remember it as this. And obviously, beforehand, Shibata had worked two matches technically in New Japan before this. A UWFI exhibition against NSJ. I think it was a 5-minute time limit, and it was just some absolutely sublime grappling where there was nothing on his head at all. And then he had a match at Wrestle Kingdom against Ren Narita. And it was like, oh my God, we're back. Mm-hmm. And then what happens is Shibata takes the mic before the match at Wrestle Kingdom and says, it's a normal match. They say it's not a normal match. It is, I say so. So it was promoted, I think, as another little exhibition where, you know, there's no strikes, just grappling. And he goes, nah, it's not. And even then, he doesn't take a strike to the head. He deals them out, doesn't take one. He might flat back once or twice, but it's a glorified grapple to Jesus fine. Which is my alliteration rule. And there's some hubbub subsequent to that of he went into business for himself. New Japan did not sanction that. People are pissed. You might not see him again. And you didn't, not in a New Japan ring.
No.
And then he just turns up in AEW and he has this match with Cassidy and there are some really cool moments in it. And the irony is that I think he gets dumped on his head with a certain Cena Nakamura style suplex where there's a bit of a botch. And you think, oh, Christ, of course that happens. And it was really nice, but it wasn't great. I was glad that it happened, but you'd be lying to yourself if you said that was the great, undiluted Katsuyori Shibata experience. He then just becomes a guy in ROH, and he has the odd match on Rampage as well, where he wrestles variously. I mean, did a few shots with Wheeler Yuta and Daniel Garcia, I believe.
Lee Moriarty also worked.
Moriarty. And then is he on the Wrestle Dream or All Out card last year with Eddie against Claudio and Yuta?
He fought Eddie for the ROH World title, New Japan Strong Openweight title at Wrestle Dream.
Yes,
but
that
he teamed
really
with him prior to that at All Out, yes.
Yes. All of these matches are carried by the sentiment that I and a lot of others have for Shibata, New Japan was the cool promotion in the 2010s, and he was the coolest thing about it. He was just so violent, this aura, this just, you do not mess with Shibata, and he just radiated cool. He still had that about him, but it wasn't just the lack of full contact. It was, he seemed a little bit, I don't know, tentative. He didn't quite have the aura. It was just, the words nice and Shibata couldn't really coexist. Mm-hmm. And they did, because it was awesome to see him. But it was always a nice thing that is happening without it ever being fully great. And there was something about his body language that I just thought, if he can't do the moves, and I don't want him to ever do the shoot headbutts again, but you'd think he'd have more about him in terms of the body language and the presence. And it was just, he can go to a level and work a great match kind of in his sleep. And it's nice to see, but it is what it is.
Mm.
And this match with Danielson happens.
Yeah, so
do the recap and I'll talk loads about it. Then I might have to rush through the rest, but it was more good than great the rest of Collision.
Yeah, that's fair. The sort of standoff early on.
But a very tortured analogy at the very end.
Ooh.
So stick around for that.
Danielson targets the arm with arm breakers and the like, and Shibata comes back with forearms and kicks, and Shibata counters an armbar into a bow and arrow lock, but then It's a lot of this. They do one move on the opponent, and the opponent immediately reverses to do it to them. They trade some chops. Danielson shoots for a single leg, goes after the arm. Shibata rolls to the apron, catches Danielson with a suplex to the forearm, boots him into the chest to take us to our break. And you're like, okay, that's a nice, you know,
a nice safe, a nice AEW Shibata match.
Yes. We come back from the break. Danielson drops Shibata with a missile drop kick, and they suddenly start ramping it up, basically. They trade drop kicks and kicks in the corner. Mm. Shibata starts nailing Danielson in the corner with some strikes. Mm. Shibata hits the hesitation drop kick, hits a suplex for a near fall, puts him in the sleeper hold. Danielson fights out of it. They trade ankle lock attempts. Danielson hit a leg trap German suplex, went for a rolling elbow, but Shibata caught him with an STO. They elbowed each other in the guts. Shibata hit a Death Valley driver for a near fall. He hits the hammer and anvil elbows, goes for the big slap, but Danielson ducks it and hits a busaiku knee.
Oh, it's just like, please kick out. You're just getting somewhere with this. Yeah. And he did.
Danielson puts the label lock on him, and Shibata scratches and claws and manages to get his foot on the bottom rope. So Danielson starts hitting him with the kicks, and Shibata sits down cross-legged and goes, come on, let's have some more. Shibata fires back up. Hit some big boots. They trade big boots, in fact. And then he starts hitting Danielson with the kicks. And Danielson sits Shibata style in defiance.
And he's been doing these yoga poses.
Yes.
For ages now.
And so Shibata stops what he's doing, sits down. Their knees are touching.
Oh my God.
You've probably seen this all over social media, them just slapping the piss out of each other.
If you notice, they still measure it perfectly. They're kind of going for each other's traps.
Mm. There was when the Danielson promo happened later, all I could think of is, like, you know those people who've been in a car accident and they've been, like, burnt by they were like, oh, my life was saved by the seatbelt. But it's obviously burnt into their skin through them pulling on it. That's what it looked like on Danielson's upper, yeah. So they fight to their feet. Danielson goes for a busaiku knee. Shibata counters it with the Rainmaker slap. Shibata locks on the Cobra twist. Danielson just makes the ropes with his foot.
Yeah, I thought it was done then.
Yeah. Danielson ducks the PK, and they go back and forth with pinning predicaments until Danielson just manages to get him down for the 1-2-3. And there's a lovely show of respect and a hug, and quite rightly a standing ovation for both men after this.
I got a bit emotional watching this, and I got fired up and my mind was blown. And this is one of a professional wrestling experience that will stay with me for a long time, if not forever. The worst thing, other than the fact that he almost friggin' died, about the last true Shibata match before this comeback, is that not only did he wrestle his best ever match, it's one of the all-time great professional wrestling matches, and he gets this career-ending injury during it. That match with Okada at Sakura Genesis 2017 is in my top five.
Really?
It is absolutely remarkable in every single conceivable level. The best Okada match that doesn't have Omega in it, and I would put it above the Tanahashi matches, which I adore. And it was like, no, the worst possible time for the worst thing to ever happen to someone. This guy in 2017 was just on a different level of cool factor, that brand of charisma completely distinct to himself. And a lot of sentiments carry this comeback, but you've never seen it in him. You kind of got a glimpse here. Danielson's amazing. So the match, do you point out, was such a bit of structural genius on the part of Danielson and Shibata.
Yeah.
The idea being that, right, I'm trying everything to beat you. You are pretty much better than me at my own game, to an extent that I haven't got the bottle for the strike exchange, so I'm going to pick your ankle and try and tap you. Oh, God, that's not working either. I'm trying to kick you. Going back to the strikes. You're just waving your fingers. And, like, the thing about Shibata is that he's funny. He never really got that sense of personality from him. He's just going, no. Wagging his finger. So you got that personality, that wonderful stuff in the space between moves, which, again at Sakura Genesis. He was untouchable at. And then the finish, because this match has been mapped out as a battle of two guys who simply cannot be separated in terms of how skilled they are at every facet of technical wrestling. It's the best possible version of he stole one, or he got away with one. He's just survived through the skin of his teeth. And because the offense was so, it felt like the kind of thing where Danielson's so giving that he kind of would do something structurally similar with a lot of opponents. This one really felt like they'd earned that story because Shibata was just on fire to a level that I didn't think was possible in 2024. The way I can put it across is, in my head, this was a 4.25, which is still a miraculous thing for this version of Shibata. In my heart, it was a 5 because I just felt. Yeah. I just didn't think I would ever get Just Bleed from Shibata ever again. And I said this on Twitter. I'll repeat it. I saw the match graphic. I lost it. And then immediately was like, right, okay. This is going to be the best version yet of this Diet Shibata match where it's a clever workaround. He might not take that many, if any, shots to the head or whatever. And it's not going to be Sakura Genesis. And mercifully, there'll be no shoot headbutts, but it'll be the best version of this kind of compromise. And it was better than that.
Yeah.
By orders of magnitude, really. That spot, and again, they're still measuring it when they're doing the dueling poses. And it doesn't just feel like Danielson doing Shibata stuff because he has been. He had that match with Daniel Garcia when he was trying to center himself and balance himself in the yoga pose. So he does that. They're at first hitting each other on the shoulders, and you think, this goddamn Bryan Danielson is so clever. Like, the way I put it in my head with Shibata is that, is there like a rule in place where it's a maximum amount of things he can take on the head? Like, is there a, what's the word I'm looking for? I don't know, it's a maximum.
Yeah.
Because even though they're kind of, Danielson's physical timing was especially great in this match because they're doing this thing where they're kicking each other in the head and they're taking it in turns. But even then it's like on the shoulder or a glancing blow. It's like they're saving everything for this slap battle. And my God, it works. Because when he is, they're doing it on their shoulders. And there's a bit when it's like you can hear it like that. And then they're doing it on the shoulders and the camera pans to the other view. And my God, he slaps that boy flush in the face. And I'm like, just bleed in the Shibata match. I'm feeling a little bit overwhelmed, emotional. It's 6:30 in the morning on Sunday in my living room. And they do this goddamn spot. And again, it feeds into the story how they cannot be separated. One person can survive this, but no one will decisively win and prove themselves the better man. Where they slap each other in the face at the same time. And it's like a tidal wave crashing into a building. That's the sound. It's like, bang. It's like, oh, Christ. It hurts my eardrum just to listen to that. This was a 4.25 star match, realistically, in my head. But in my heart, at various moments, it was a 5. An eruption of transgressive violence that I really didn't expect to see, but I didn't know how much I wanted to see it.
Yeah.
This was a 5-star for the heart. I couldn't have loved it more.
Cut me off. In a weird way, I was glad at the end of this match that we didn't know about it, because I was like, well, we never would have predicted this.
Yeah.
So that was followed by the TBS title being on the line, Julia Hart defending against Trish Adora. The
choice doing some technical work here.
Open house rule for this match is that loser is going to be banned from ringside for the House of Black Infantry tag tournament match.
That was a neat idea.
Yeah, that was coming later on. Early on, Adora actually does well. She gets Julia Hart in a double arm submission and does the splits on top of her to get a bit of a reaction. She also gets another wild-looking submission on Hart, but Hart escapes the floor, sends Adora into the steps and into the barricade to take us to a break. Adora fires back up those strikes, body slam into the knee for a near fall. There was also a great spot, where she suplexed her or body slammed her on whilst Adora was on her knees, which looked really good. Hart goes for the Heartless submission. Adora reverses it into a pin. But Hart lays in more shots, hits a moonsault, and gets the win to retain and stop anyone being at ringside for the infantry match later.
Yeah, I enjoyed some dovetailing booking here more than I enjoyed the body of the match and the action in it. It was just a choice to lean technical after you've just watched Shibata and Danielson yes. in the opener. One more thing on Shibata and Danielson. I can't remember watching a match where it reaches what you think is the finish and you just don't want it to end.
Yeah.
You just do not want it to end. And when he kicked out of that beside you, I was like, oh, yes. And when he ducked this another Psyche, mm-hmm. I was like, oh, he's going to get hit with another one. This is the finish. Oh, please. I just don't want it to end. Like, I'm checking the time.
Yeah.
Saying like, oh, and it just didn't. And I just never wanted it to end. I watched it twice.
Yeah.
When was the last? I've watched a few pay-per-view matches again, like ZSJ Bryan. I've watched the Sting match against the Bucks twice. So I watched the odd pay-per-view match twice. Several, in fact. The last AEW TV match I watched twice was Omega Vikingo. Just I wanted to see, will I get the same feeling from like a fireworks exhibition? So I watched this twice, that's how much I loved it. And it was just a choice and not a particularly good one to go as technical as they did in this one. Didn't do a lot for me, I didn't think. But like, it's the sequencing of the card. It was the contrast. Maybe in and of itself, it wasn't a bad deal at all, but I couldn't really get locked in.
No, me neither.
I could only just say, that's not as good as what I've just watched.
And there's never any doubt as much as you got some near falls from Trish Dora.
An AEW Women's TV match in every which way.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds. And they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Let's talk about something now that I know you're excited to discuss, so much so you want to talk about Rampage.
Yes.
Zack Knight is there with Harley Cameron backstage with Lexi Nair. They're asked about Cool Hand Ange, who's extended a challenge to Zack Knight. But Knight says no. He's not giving Parker the home country advantage.
Kind of for about a month. Why does this have to go on as long as that?
That match is going to happen on his terms.
Wembley?
Let's be having you.
Right, okay. Adam Wilbourn, you and I'll make this point where it's probably a stupid thing to say, but do you know I like every motion picture ever made? Do you know how stupid that sounds?
Yeah.
People have preferences, people have tastes. It's one thing when you bias is when you would like bury one company for doing one thing and just looking over it when the other company does it. That's I make the point with JD McDonagh. Like, you cannot hate Will Ospreay in, like, a JD McDonagh match. You just can't. Mm-hmm. You just can't. And it's when, you know, AEW hired Ric Flair. I was disgusted and didn't just say, oh, well, I like AEW more than WWE. So when they hire the alleged sexual predator, that's kind of okay. I try and hold myself to account with things like this. I've just got a preference, and it leans towards AEW's presentation and, you know, virtually everything they do. Leading me to, you've got the same thing, but you just kind of, is it fair to say that you just lean towards WWE?
Yeah.
It appeals more to your sensibilities?
Say so, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And your favorite WWE brand is?
NXT.
Right, okay, well, good luck, NXT, because Adam Wilborn's got a new best friend. Friendship ended with NXT. AEW is my new best friend because Zack Knight is...
He's giving you NXT vibes, is he?
Yeah.
That's one way
so,
of putting it.
And as I am to understand, bad means good. Mm-hmm. So Zack Knight's going to be your new favorite wrestler and AEW Rampage is going to be your new favorite brand because this was so NXT. NXT, I use as shorthand for bad, stupid, and fake.
Yes.
Bad, stupid, and fake. So you get this on Collision, but it's on the back of an angle on Rampage, which is on the back of his character development for Zack Knight, where he's playing this unhinged guy.
And one of your favorites, that, when someone gets unhinged.
I hate it more than anything. So the idea is like... He just wants a fight. And Saraya is demanding that someone gives her brother a fight. So we'll see Zack Knight with the worst acting you've ever seen in your life. Because in and of itself, this I'm furious acting, very few people can get away with it. I'm going to make a broader point next. Somebody's going, rawr, rawr, rawr. I hate it so much. I hate it so much, right? But it's stupid and fake and bad. Because if you are so up a height, so infuriated, you've taken leave of your senses, and you're just so angry, which Zack Knight tried to portray in this angle on Rampage, you can't think straight. If you cannot think straight...
You're just seeing red.
How can you then think rationally? Because you can't. You, the red mist has descended. How can you then think rationally? You go, better get my catchphrase in. Twice, and it's Delia Smith as well.
Yeah.
Oh, let's be having you. And then you pick someone and you punch them up. Somebody else comes to you. You've lost it at this point, and your bloodlust has intensified because you've already beat somebody up. Let's be having you. You cannot have that as your catchphrase to begin with. It's terrible. Nor when you can't think straight, but you can think hard enough to focus. Right, I can get my catchphrase in here again. It's so bad. It's so goddamn bad. But as you know, Wilborn, bad means good, so he's your favourite. There is a take that I'm about to deliver about how there is no such thing as objectivity in art.
Fair.
Everyone's taste is subjective. Mm-hmm. And I call bollocks. Mm-hmm. I think there is. I know there isn't. Fundamentally and definitionally, there can be no objectivity in art. But there is. You cannot tell me with a straight face, with any kind of justification, that Zack Knight losing it, air quotes, in this backstage segment on Rampage, right? How can anyone say with a straight face, or with good taste, and maybe that's a difference,
people got bad taste,
that this is objectively or subjectively better than Eddie Kingston in that verbal confrontation with CM Punk ahead of Full Gear 2021 when he's like, he knows how to actually do it. So what happens is he's in this confrontation with Punk. It's really pissy. It's really petty, but that's what a lot of conflict is. And Eddie Kingston's good, objectively and fundamentally good. So what happens is he knows how to get angry correctly, right? So when you get angry, what do you do? Well, you're not an angry guy, right?
No.
So it's better if I go through the process. If I'm getting angry or something, what I do is, and I was told, oh, yeah, I do that, when I did a bit of CBT, of you'll notice you'll start being sarcastic when you're angry or when you feel like you're on the verge of getting angry. And you go, oh, great. Oh, that's a wonderful thing for me to happen. That's because sarcasm is like the cousin of anger and one
a defense mechanism. Yeah,
and it leads, and you just get sarcastic, and it's one way of processing it before you erupt. Eddie Kingston got sarcastic because he's clever and he knows these things, and it's a lived-in experience for him. You get sarcastic, and then you just erupt. Eddie Kingston's when he tries to bite CM Punk, his tongue out. You cannot tell me that. Oh, subjectively, I thought Zack Knight did a better job.
Yeah.
There is objectivity in art, and that is the example I'm going to pull from to get there. But happily, yeah, you think Rampage is goated because bad means good.
I'd get him in NXT. I'd partner it with him with a guy called Jack Day, and that's Night and Day. And then just one says, let's be having you. And then everyone says, you want some? And you're off to the races then. We should get the Wheelstone Raider in. I don't know if he's busy or whatever. Anyway, Daniel Garcia versus Lee Moriarty game next.
This is really nice.
Yeah, Garcia, I like the bit where he feigned the punch and then just kicked a leg out from Moriarty, and he was doing the dance and winding him up and what have you. And Garcia drop kicks Moriarty out to the floor. Garcia goes after him as he sends him back in. Shane Taylor doesn't put his hands on him, but takes his attention away for long enough to Moriarty to fill the gap left by Darby Allin with an insane tope to blindside him, I think, to take us to a break. We come back, Garcia's fighting back. He targets the knee constantly. Chop block, punches, stomps. He's trying to take the legs out from Lee Moriarty. Garcia hit a backdrop driver for a near fall. Moriarty caught Garcia by the head for a roll-up. Couldn't go for the corner charge. Couldn't follow it up, though, due to the damage to the knee. But he managed to fight out whatever Garcia's going for and hit him with a double stomp to the chest. But Garcia kicks out, heel hooks him, and gets the submission win.
You know what's great about AEW? The matches. Sorry, Hamlet. So often, I'm not saying all WWE TV matches are bad, but I just never really get any depth of thought or anything really out of them, even though they can be hot or exciting. What's great about this little throwaway match on Collision that no one will remember at the end of the year? It wasn't necessarily great in and of itself, and was just a nice time, the nice, compact, lean story that ultimately served the only objective of keeping Daniel Garcia in the mix and giving him a win. It's that Lee Moriarty has watched Christian Cage versus Daniel Garcia at the Pape because his knee is getting worked on. So he's, in my head, Moriarty is studying that tape and going, right, okay, well, he's going to go after my knee. And then they're thinking in layers deeper than, you know, other promotions that I watch in or have watched and don't think are as good as this. So Lee Moriarty, in my head, is watching this tape of Garcia and Christian Cage and thinking, right, okay, well, clearly he's going to go after my knee. That's how he gets, he targets a lot of his submission offense, whether it's the Dragon Slayer or a heel hook. He likes to go for the knee. Cut me off my vertical base. How at some point he's going to work it over, but the question is, right, how can I anticipate what he's going to do next after working the knee? Because that's a formality, that's an inevitability. And at Revolution, Garcia works over Christian's knee. Christian, if you remember, stumbles when he goes for the spear pile driver. They do that spot again when he's going to go, right, he's worked over the knee. Right, I can go for the pile driver here, but Moriarty is studied and then reverses the pile driver. They're great wrestlers, and that's great wrestling.
Unfortunately, next we got a recap from Darby Allin and Jay White and the Bullet Club Gold Attack, and they announced that Darby Allin unfortunately will not be climbing Mount Everest this year. It's broken his foot. It looked rough. We talked about this earlier.
Yeah, it looks like it's just completely come apart in three places. At the end of the
day, explains the beatdown a little bit more because it was like, you don't need to write him off. Everyone knows he's going to go to Everest, but
I just think it was a bit of serendipity. Well, Jay White versus Darby Allin 2, not quite as big as it was in my head when he was going to come back from Everest, having been prevented in his climb by Jay White. But at the same time, oh, I've took your dream away from you. I mean, that match could be massive when Darby Allin hopefully is healthy enough to return. It's almost like a given as well. Maybe it isn't. They always just think, all right, that's 6 months off. Maybe, like, you know, you never know these things, so all the best to him.
Pac in action next. His singles in-ring return for AEW. He was against Aaron Solo, who got a bit of offense in early on. Overhead throw, dive to the outside, but Pac just kicked him in the face, hit some stomps in the corner, nails him with a black arrow, locks on the brutalizer for the victory, gets on the mic afterwards and says he's back, he's looking for trouble. Aaron Solo wasn't quite who he had in mind, so he called out Tony Khan, did Pac, saying you better find him some trouble or he's going to have to go and find it himself.
This is great because the idea is the match is completely incidental. It's a backdrop. I'll never get tired ever of seeing the Black Arrow, so that rules. But now the idea, and it's working because I was thinking, oh, who do I want to watch Pac wrestle? Oh, great, everyone. But you know it's going to be someone big. Maybe Okada.
Yeah.
Maybe Roddy Strong.
Mm.
What a match that would be. Either way, Pac versus our name wrestler is guaranteed to be great. And it looks like they're really putting him back in the mix. So I had a good time with this.
We see that Brian Danielson thing we talked about a little bit about earlier, where he's meditating in the back, how grateful he is being able to get in the ring.
Miracle match.
Katsuyori Shibata.
In every way. God, I might watch it again tonight.
Obviously, they were once both medically unable ever to compete again. Talked about Will Ospreay and what he said on Dynamite, and specifically where he said he wasn't planning to die at Dynasty. And that's when he knew that Ospreay would never be able to walk in his shoes, because Danielson has been on death's door because of pro wrestling. Despite Ospreay knowing what he's willing to do, he's not ready for what Danielson is going to do, basically.
Well, they're going to kill each other, and they are effectively creating a very uneasy feeling about what they're going to do in the ring, and I'm absolutely here for that.
Then we got Claudio versus Lance Archer. Disappointed we didn't get a result from this, because it really started kicking into gear.
It did. Flabby middle.
Mm. So as they start off, McGuinness brings up the fact that I did like the fact he brought up Cassagnoli's body slam of Paul White. I won't mention where. They've been doing this a lot recently, both companies, WWE and AEW. There you see Rhea Ripley at UFC over the weekend. Who's that she's with? Moving on. Archer gets beaten up against the ropes. He finally, Claudio can get it up to, or get him over the top rope. But Archer catches Castagnoli on the floor, goes to choke slam on the apron, but Castagnoli just jumps up onto the apron. Archer ducks a clothesline and hits a big cannonball off the apron to take us to break. When we come back, Archer hits a ripcord Uranagi for a near fall, goes for a DDT, but Castagnoli ridiculously gets him up for a vertical suplex. Big lariat takes down Claudio, though. Archer goes for that rope walk, but Claudio pulls him into an uppercut, hits a double stomp that sent Archer to the outside. He follows him out there and hits a running uppercut. But Archer comes back with a rising knee, gets a choke slam for a two count, loads him up for the blackout, but Claudio gets out of it and hits a Death Valley driver instead. Huge cutter for a near fall. Archer counted out of a neutralizer, but Claudio caught him with a springboard uppercut. He sets up for the giant swing, but suddenly in comes the Righteous to make it a no contest. Attacks Claudio, DQ. Brian Danielson comes out to make the save, but it's 3-on-2 still. The Righteous hit him with their finish, and then Shibata slides down with a chair before, but Lance Archer and the Righteous have bailed at that point. The Righteous targeting the BCC.
Oh. Can't be asked for that. Might not be funny. I can't be asked for the Righteous for anything. There's just way more talent that I've got over who aren't being used, who would be better used on the program. I understand that you've got to eat something sometimes, and people won't improve without being on TV, but I just don't think the Righteous have shown me a thing to justify being on one of the two big shows. So I was like, this is the direction. And look, it's not going to be too much of an imposition. The BCC had a nice little mini feud with Shane Taylor Promotions at the start of the year. I don't expect this similar thing to be anything different or more, you know, of an imposition than that, but I just can't be arsed. I just didn't rate the Righteous at all last year, to be brutally honest. This match was weird because at the start, it was really fun. Like, a really fun, look at what these guys can do. And when you saw the match graphic, you went, this should be fun. And then when the match unfolded, I said, yeah, this is what I wanted it to be. And it dragged a bit, and I was like, oh, get over, like, just, this is not as fun. It's a bit flabby. And then just as it started to get hot again, this happened. Fundamentally, they rarely do, even once a month's fine, because that's like 12 in a year, to do a DQ. When was the last one? Copeland Garcia, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Not that long ago, but, you know, they could probably do it more often or as often as they're doing. I don't care. It's just when it's done in excess and nothing matters anymore that annoys me. Yeah, I'm not excited about... Look, I'll tell you what, Shibata being aligned with the BCC is something. I mean, yes. That's a pretty awesome prospect, but it's like the monkey's paw. Oh, Shibata's joined the BCC. What? Are they going to feud with the Righteous?
That's a very fair comparison, yeah. Kyle O'Reilly's in-ring return came next. Cool Kyle O'Reilly. And
correct.
I bought it. I thought he was going to lose at one point during this. And I'll tell you the exact point it happened as we get into it. He's facing Brian Keith, who is another one you can add to that list of mine of no idea who this person was until he brought him into AEW, and now I think they're brilliant.
Bit like AR Fox.
A bit like AR Fox, you're right there, Sidge. So early on, the story I got was he's missed a step. He's still getting back into it, basically.
He worked it.
O'Reilly. Yeah, brilliantly. So every time he gets like a headlock, boom, Keith's out of it and he's knocked him to the floor or whatever. There's one point O'Reilly bails to the floor early on and you can tell he's like, get your shit together, Kyle. So O'Reilly came back in, rising knee, slapped to the face, but Keith caught him in a cobra twist and a hook kick and a DDT to take us to break. When we come back, O'Reilly's still in trouble. Lovely message from Tony Schiavone in amongst this, by the way, to MMA legend Mark Coleman, who, oh boy, has been through it, but a fantastic story and glad to hear that him and his family are doing well now. O'Reilly comes back with a big knee, fires up with strikes, hits a back suplex, gets a knee bar, but Keith goes into the ropes. Keith manages to get some offense in, but O'Reilly gets a triangle choke and a penalty kick. O'Reilly goes up top, but all of a sudden Keith's there with him. He headbutts him down, and O'Reilly goes to the leg again. This is the bit that got me. Brian Keith hits him with a knee, and as he's falling to the floor, gets hit with a second one.
Yeah.
And I went, oh, that's it, he's out. They're going to tell the story of he's not all the way recovered, and that's not helped because he just went limp. And I was like,
what a bump, by the way.
Worst thing, you know, boxing, MMA, I'm a fan of both those sports, and you know, it's not just the shot you don't see coming. It's like, so another good one with Tyson Fury when people thought he was KO'd against Wilder. Gets hit with the punch that knocks him down. But as he's going down, Wilder catches him with another. And you're like, well, you've got nothing. That's it.
Yeah.
And that's what I got from this. But no, Kyle O'Reilly kicks out. Keith goes for Diamond Dust, but O'Reilly rips him off the ropes by the arm, hits those kicks. Keith comes back with an enziguri. They both counter each other's strikes. O'Reilly hits a lariat and a brainbuster for a two count. But then immediately as Keith kicks out, he transitions into an armbar to get the submission victory. And then Roderick Strong and the Kingdom come down and celebrate with them. And he's a bit like, thanks, guys. And the Kingdom put him on their shoulders. And he's a bit, shucks about it all. But he's very happy to have got the win.
Too nice, isn't he? It's too nice because he made it abundantly clear that he wants to do it by himself.
Yep.
Maybe he shouldn't have done that elaborate angle at Revolution if he had just went, oh, right, Roddy backstage.
Yeah.
I was going to see it myself for a bit. Maybe, you know, it's a bit silly, but it's wrestling. Kyle O'Reilly. You know, that's like a contrarian. Oh, he's not that good to like everyone.
Yeah.
Other than maybe Danielson.
Yeah.
And Kawada just doesn't get that. There's like a select Gunther. Like people in bad faith will hate these people because, oh, Gunther works for WWE. Or Danielson works for AEW.
It's like when people decided, actually, Mercedes Moné sucks.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. For people who, I'm not interested in those people anymore. There are people whose opinions I value who think Kyle O'Reilly has a tendency to be a little bit too wacky with his selling. And I can get it. I've seen matches where I know sometimes he plays it up for comic effect, but I've seen matches where I was like, are you trying to be funny here? Or are you just very, what are the kids say 5 years ago, extra?
Yes. Because he was hit like the rebound lariat, the wacky line.
He's done that a few times. He's done a lot of like, he's a priest. It's weird because he configures a lot of his stuff and he did it to incredible fashion here to appeal to people who have got certain cues from sports where it's like, oh, he's done. Mm. Like you pointed out, like his bump for that second knee was like, oh my God, he's out, because he understands how people sell, they're not selling, how people get hurt or killed in real combat disciplines. And I think that can sometimes feel incongruous to a slapstick and the two don't meet and maybe it needs to pick a lane. I thought he picked a lane fabulously here. As you said, a really good return match in almost every single way because it felt like he was returning to action for the first time, as he actually was. So he's worked it. A bit of shades of when the Young Bucks had the ring rust.
Mm-hmm.
And you see it in like Japanese wrestling a lot. Really, really strong.
It's a hard bar to clear as well because I automatically now think of Omega.
Yeah.
Talking about going, he's back. And I think it's all part of the gimmick that he's not quite there yet.
When he came out with a tan on in the jeweled gear, it All Out 2022, which no one remembers, but I do. I thought, oh, you've worked me, and look at those exchanges you had with Hangman Page. Are they the best you've ever looked in the ring together? Oh my God, it's back, and then it got ruined. Oh, you know, but no, I thought his bumping here was tremendous. I thought he picked a lane, and it wasn't too good by great design. Lovely to watch, and a really intelligently put together match.
Cut that hair, though. I prefer short hair Kyle O'Reilly for me.
Physique-wise, I think he looks better than he ever has in AEW. He looks like he's really leaned out.
I forgot to mention that back at the start of his match. Nothing wrong with Aaron Solo. I went, look at my physique compared to this.
Yeah, no. Like,
I'd probably kill for Aaron Solo's physique. No.
Who would you kill? Oh, well, after the podcast.
After the podcast. Deonna Purrazzo and Thunder Rosa are there with Lexi Nair. They've got a tag team match against Tony Storm and Ryan May on Dynamite. Both got the same enemy, so... That's what Purrazzo said about Tony Storm. That means they can trust each other. And Rosa said, by the way, I never lost the women's title. And they're going to cut all the jokes on Dynamite. We'll obviously preview this later on.
Yeah, I don't want to step on our own dick.
No. Real surprise next. It was the House of Bleak versus the Infantry. It was like the wild card thing to the tournament. Blah, blah, blah. And before the match, the Infantry are dead.
They already told you this was happening.
Mm.
Why did they have the FTR promo segment with the Infantry last week? Wouldn't this have been much better if that hadn't happened? Because I thought they did a really stellar job of the way in which they told the story. If they just hadn't done that thing last week, I think it would have been biting.
A huge shock, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, they get jumped before the bell. They both get knocked out of the ring. One of them eats a huge kick from Buddy Matthews. Another one takes a crossbody from Brody King on the outside. And I like the spot where Matthews and King then got in the ring and just stood there like, well, we're ready to have a tag match whenever you two want. The other two are just crawling into the ring. They immediately hit. I thought the finish was coming. I thought that when they hit, is it Bravo, I think it was, with the cannonball. I was like, cool, so this match isn't going through commercial.
I thought they'd completely subverted.
Yeah,
the FTR Infantry angle, with the idea being, I don't know, House
of
Black.
You can have all the plans you want, but House of Black in here, anyway, after the commercial, Sean Dean gets the hot tag, slips as he comes off the top rope, but I'm not going to hold that against him. He recovered really nicely. King shuts him down, though, after a back and forth with Buddy Matthews with a big, big lariat. Pop-up knee. Dean gets hit with the Dante's Inferno, and you're like, okay, this is it. But no, Bravo just dives in to break up the pin. Matthews knocks Bravo off the apron onto King, who Death Valley drives him into the announce table and then hits another pile driver on the announce table, which doesn't break.
Oh, my God.
Always better.
Always better. Matthews gets in the ring. Sean Dean's like, what are we doing? Curb stomp to him. Okay, that's it. One, two. Nah, Buddy Matthews isn't done. He wants to inflict some more damage, so he doesn't kick out. He gets lifted up at two. Julia Hart's directing traffic at this point. Matthews goes to the top rope. Referee's like, Julia, you need to get down from the apron. As they're distracted doing that, Mark Briscoe appears from nowhere, twats Buddy Matthews with a chair, gets Brody King's attention. He gets chased through the audience by Brody King, who doesn't realize that Sean Dean has just rolled on top of Buddy Matthews. One, two, three. The Infantry win. They shock the House of Black. Who am I talking about? Mark Briscoe has cost them the match. Malakai Black is furious at the end as he comes out.
I wasn't in the match. I just wish they hadn't done the promo with the Infantry, because the second you saw the story play out, which again, in and of itself, thought they did a really remarkable job of, this can be a good word and a bad word, often bad, in this case good, protecting the House of Black. Yes. They never looked like losers. The Infantry just looked like, well, we'll take it and we'll try and give FTR a fight. You know what I mean? They hadn't have shot that promo battle last week, I would have just been, where are they going with this match? I mean, like, really into it, when I should have been saying.
Or you just think, okay, this squash is going on a long time.
Yeah, but I think I would have gone, are they going where I think I'm going here?
Mm.
Instead, because of last week, I went, I think they're going where they said they were going to go in effect. But no, they did a good job of making the House of Black look like complete dicks who could just beat anyone up at their whim. Again, there was flashes of the body language here where they are so good, the House of Black. I put a lot of thought into what they do, where they're so good at appearing unstoppable, invincible.
Oh, yeah.
It's going to be weird when they inevitably disband without doing much. They'll never be the top heel unit. I know they kind of are on Collision, but not really. they're going to be relitigating how good the House of Black are for years, and I do not look forward to it. But I can also see both sides of that argument, which will happen for years and years, because they've got that goth tinge thing as well. If you are vaguely supernatural leaning, you will get talked about forever and put over by certain people who anything supernatural is good. So they've got that element fighting for them and really good at appearing like no one can beat them.
I just was really glad as well that Mark Briscoe's storyline, the House of Black, didn't end when he just randomly lost alongside Jay Lethal and Jeff Jarrett and got put through a flaming table. I was like, well, that's a bit disappointing for Mark Briscoe, but now obviously we go from here. Main event time. We got a big video package on the history of Christian Cage and Adam Copeland. And Adam Copeland comes out along with the Mystery Blacks. Talked about how for a long time he didn't think he'd get to wrestle in Canada again. Great to be back. Another memory been made, etc., etc.
Back almost as long as he was here, man. He keeps saying stuff like this.
He says Christian Cage. He's calling him.
Didn't he have an? He was talking about the specific province. Okay.
Yes. Yeah, and he
Ottawa.
He put over when he put over Toronto or whatever, and they boo. Anyway, so he talks about Christian Cage because Jay's dead to him. He's bought into being Christian Cage, bought into all the hype, forgotten who he was. You know, he thought that him and Cage could look back on their lives and just be proud of achieving their dreams together. And he came to AEW to end his career with Cage as friends, but Cage clearly didn't want that. Talks about earning his way to World's End to win the TNT title and then losing it straight afterwards. But then obviously he had to work his way back into it. He recovered, he started the Cope Open and earned his way to a title shot before the Patriarchy took him out with a concerto. And while he was laid up, he got a call from someone in his past who reminded him who he goddamn was.
Let's get reminded who he is every single friggin' month.
And he opens the box to reveal a 2x4 with nails stuck in it. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome Spike. He got a phone call from Mrs. Foley's baby boy. Don't know who that could be. But it made him remember who he was, the stuff that he's done in the past with things like Spike. And him and Spike are going to change Christian Cage. They're going to take away his pride, take away his ego, and he's going to make Cage say words that he never thought he'd say. Two words, I quit. 40 years of history are going to come to end in their hometown on Wednesday night.
I continue to be sick of Jack Reacher Copeland. Turn him heel. Be a heel tag team with.
I watched Jack Reacher last night. I watched the opening of it.
Amazon or Cruise?
Cruise.
Ah, watch Amazon.
Okay.
It's great.
Is it?
That's class.
Oh, actually, no.
It's like 6 foot
it's
five.
It's just called Reacher or something.
Reacher is a 6 foot five brick house.
Yes, and Louise has
told
me about that.
Such a badass. Anyway. So I've got one thing to say before my tortured analogy, right?
Oh, I'm excited for this.
So I don't want to put words in Osprey's mouth. Maybe it was just a lapse in concentration, but I was, for my sins, listening to Talk as Jericho because I wanted to hear the Osprey interview.
Yes.
And he was talking about at the end, who do you want to work with? So you again, Chris. It's the usual set. It's the usual setup.
Whilst eating an Omaha steak, probably.
Yeah. And he's talking about Swerve's been around my house. I never got the chance to do a proper match with him. Hangman Page. Me and Kenny are 1-1. I want to do a third match with him. And he goes, oh yeah, Edge is here. I want to wrestle him as well. And I think a lot of people have that with Edge. Copeland. Oh yeah, he works here. It just... Put it this way, Okada and Ospreay are so much more exciting as arrivals than Copeland's been. I don't think Copeland would be missed if it never happened. It's just, he's fine. I'm going to move in. 2008, September, I'd left Leeds, decided to move back up to Gateshead / Newcastle, and I moved in with some mates. So from... September 2008, and I'm to about 2011 ish, and then me and in 2011 I met my wife, and then we each moved home so we could save for a deposit or whatever. So for 3 years I lived with the boys up here, right? Okay, every single...
Just one more night.
Yeah. You know how in America, then, it works over here with the rights. It's like, what was it before? What was on before Dynamite? What was the lead-in? I was either the accountant. I've just read about this. Yeah. I don't live in America. Either the accountant or What was the other film that they always used to put on? Snowpiercer.
Yes.
Oh, that was after. The Accountant was always the one that's beforehand, right? So what these channels buy the rights to a film, and they just put this one film on all the time. Well, paid for it, have it. Every single Sunday, ITV2, after we'd been out on the Saturday night on the session with the boys, every Saturday, ITV2, when we'd congregate after the lie-in, we'd go for a pub dinner, get home, we're going to watch football on. That's a bad fixture. Right, okay. What's on ITV2? Is it Back to the Future again? I can't do this anymore.
Like by yeah, they do.
By 2009, early 2010, I was like, I cannot watch Back to the Future anymore, right? I just cannot watch it anymore. I have to think Back to the Future is a really great film.
Yes.
Or I used to think it was a really great film. And I bought the 3-disc trilogy DVD once upon a time. I was in my 20s or whatever. 38 now. And it's gathering dust. It's probably in the loft, actually. I haven't seen the physical copy in years. Never in my life ever would I make a conscious choice to watch. I'd watch Back to the Future, right? Because it's really, really good, even great. Not one of my absolute favorite films. And I've seen it, 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 and I've seen it. I can never imagine me in my entire life getting the disc out, making the effort to watch a film. You know what I mean? That's not an effort. You just sit there.
DVD loading menu.
Yeah, like Back to the Future. I would never, ever do it, right? If for whatever reason, the internet's just down in the house. And it happens, yeah?
Yeah.
And you think, right, okay, oh, God, I have to watch the telly here. I can read a book, but like, the kids are watch something as well. There's no YouTube. There's no Netflix. What's on the telly? Back to the Future's on. There's no else. I'll watch Back to the Future. And then you'll watch it and go, it's a really good film, this.
Yeah.
It's a really good film. I've seen better. Better films have been released subsequently. Not even my favourite nostalgia, Back to the Future. But when you watch it, hey, good film, this. Adam Copeland's Back to the Future.
And on that note, we will conclude. Let us know your thoughts on that and all of our discussions regarding AW Collision this week.
His fault is I've watched him since 1998.
At what
culture? I just would never put him in my Blu-ray player.
Fair. At what culture? I prefer to watch True Grit. At what culture? WWE on X.
Is Edge of Tomorrow good?
It is good. Is that that's the cruise, isn't it?
Yeah, because it came out on Netflix and I thought I might watch that sometime.
Actually, it might not be good. I'm going to caveat that. I watched that about a week after it was born and I don't know. Yeah. I remember having an fun time.
I'm just going to start reading To Kill a Mockingbird. I'm just going to do it. I've got out the reading already.
Really?
Yeah. I'm going to start tonight.
Well, if you want to suggest any books for Sidge to read.
Yeah, please do.
You can follow him on X at
M. Sidgwick.
Follow me at Adam Wilborn. Follow us all at What Culture WWE. As I said, make sure you subscribe to What Culture Wrestling, wherever you get your podcasts from, for daily wrestling podcasts. You can check out the Raw preview and the SmackDown review right now. And we will, of course, be back later on this week to preview AEW Dynamite and the I Quit match between Adam Copeland and Christian Cage. But for now, this has been the AEW Collision Review. My thanks to Michael Sidgwick. Thank you for joining us. And we will see you soon.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.